I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I come to you today with concern in my heart. Concern for our country, concern for our fellow citizens, concern for our republic, concern for freedom and liberty. And I usually try and take a pretty positive spin on the events of the day and look for the silver lining in things. But I'm having a hard time with that today. The death of George Floyd is something that is on everybody's mind today, especially as the nation burns and our cities are inflamed with violence, looting, anger, and pain. Now, right from the very beginning here, let me say that we should all treat each other decently and fairly, and racism is an abomination. It is something that prevents us from getting together as people, prevents us from getting together spiritually, the way our God intended us to be, and it is something that causes pain and derision. Now, that being said, it cuts both ways. Racism is not a one-sided thing. Anytime people treat each other poorly based on race or on stereotypes, we are all damaged. So George Floyd, this man going about his business, we've all seen the video. It's horrific video. There's no doubt about it. There's no way you can look at that video and say, oh, well, just officers doing their job. Now, I know there can be arguments made on the other side, and I'm not going to do that right at the moment. We don't know exactly what transpired, but we have video. Video shows us a lot. Now, have we seen all the video? I don't know that I have seen all the video. I'm hearing that there's other videos that show him at the door of the car, and he wouldn't get in the car, and that's why they put him on the ground. I don't know. All I know is a man who started out his day is dead. And there's very few instances in life when you can say, well, that's the way it would have went. You know, somebody commits an armed robbery, and they come out shooting, well, and they end up dead. That's what happens. You know, right now we're hearing that he might have passed a counterfeit $20 bill. Okay, well, there's two things there. One, he knew it was counterfeit bill and he was conducting a scam and a crime. Or number two, maybe he didn't know it was counterfeit bill. Maybe he got it in change and he went in to buy something. Either way, the store owner noticed it, apparently called the police, and the police came to investigate. Now, once they got there to investigate, this is where we see some of the video start, this store video back and forth. And again, I'm not going to argue the merits of what on here and there. The video we've all seen with Officer Chauvin, I think that's how you pronounce his name, kneeling on his neck for 8 minutes is visually abhorrent. It is shocking to the senses to see, especially as the man is saying he can't breathe, he needs help. You know, the fact that he died right there on the scene tells you there was something wrong. I'm at a loss to figure out exactly how do we solve this problem without having an all-encompassing conversation, which unfortunately, I fear in America, is not possible. Now, recently, the great Malcolm Out Loud ran some programs on race in America because of Mr. Arbery being killed down in Georgia. And we started talking about it. We started thinking about it and asking questions about race and how do we address these problems, these inequities, real, perceived, whatever, in our country. And I've been loath to come out and give an opinion because I don't have all the facts. I was not there. I can look at the video, and the video tells me horrifying of what happened to Mr. Arbery and also what happened to George Floyd. There's no question about it. You can't be a human being and watch that video and not feel for that man. My question as an investigator would have been, okay, let's say he stiffened up at the car door and he didn't want to get in. He was resisting there. I don't know. Is there video of that? Let's see that. And that's why they put him on the ground. Okay, well, why was he on the ground for 8 minutes? You had four cops there. You can't grab him by the arms and legs and push him into the car? I don't want to second guess police work, of which I was not a part of, but I have to look at that video and say, that's not how I would have done it. I don't know exactly what Trudette minds. The officer, okay, Officer Chauvin, there's only a couple choices here. One, he just hated that man because he was black, and he was going to sit on his neck until he killed him. Now, if we believe that, that's first-degree murder. He had nothing else to do that day. He has a suspect. He doesn't care about black people, and therefore, I'll just kneel on his neck, and I'll kill him, and I'll get away with it because I'm a white cop. I don't think anybody can seriously believe that. Now, can he be totally insensitive to the man? He could. That he could. Could he not like him personally? Because apparently they knew each other. Could he not like him because he was black? Of course. But to think that he would say, well, I could just murder this guy right now in front of everyone with all these cameras rolling, and I'll do it with impunity. That's something we have to consider. Is that what he did? Is that what happened there? Or was there some other reason he was kneeling on his neck? Now, I know a lot of people are going to get upset. Lieutenant Joe, you shouldn't even be worrying about that. You shouldn't even think about that. You should just look at what happened. We can't do that. We have got to look at the whole picture and understand what happened. If the officer did that purposely to kill that man, then he should be charged with first-degree murder. And in my opinion, he should pay with the death penalty. If that was his intent, to kill that man, to kill Mr. Floyd, then that officer should be charged, convicted, and pay with his life. Just as any wanton murderer should be. My question, though, is, what was the intent? Now, the reason they charged him with third-degree murder, you got to understand the differences here. First-degree murder basically means you plotted it, you planned it, and then you executed it. You killed someone. Like people do for insurance money, or they do to get rid of their wife because they have a girlfriend and they don't want to go on with the wife and they don't want to pay support and all that kind of stuff. Second-degree murder is normally, in lots of states, where you act in a way that is reckless and dangerous and carries with it the possibility of seriously injuring or killing somebody, and you do it anyway. Third-degree murder seems to me, and I haven't read the entire Minnesota statute, but it seems to me, based on logic, that third-degree murder means you're acting in such a way as to disregard the reality that someone could be seriously injured or die based on your actions. And that's the manslaughter third degree. You caused this man's death, and the law is not, it's not first degree murder. He didn't get up that morning and say, I'm going to go kill this man. Let me go find him, target him. I know where he is. Let me put him on the ground. Let me kill him in front of everybody. And I understand the family, because most people don't understand the differences between the gradation of law. You know, it's first degree murder. He killed the guy. The guy was calling for help, and he did it anyway, and the guy died. That's first degree murder. Well, that's why the facts are important. What was in that officer's mind? Was he trying to kill the guy? Or was he holding him on the ground for whatever reason? We don't know that. Why would anybody in their right mind kneel on somebody's neck for 8 minutes? Even if we take it and say he's a bad guy, that cop is a bad man, and he wanted to hurt Mr. Floyd. Why would you kneel on his neck for 8 minutes with all those cameras running? Well, so it goes back to my original theory. Either he was a totally evil human being who set out to murder, and then that would be first degree. Or he was doing his job, not paying attention to the man's pleas, thinking that there could be something wrong with the guy, and he did it anyway. Second degree murder. Third degree murder, he thought he was doing what he was trained to do. I've read in places that they've been trained to use a neck hold to hold someone in place while you take them into custody. Dangerous. It's a dangerous move. And in this case, it looks like one of the contributing factors to the man's death. Now, the autopsy came out, and people don't care about the autopsy. The autopsy says There was no strangulation, which means he didn't compress the guy's neck. He wasn't choking him with his knee. He didn't, there was no asphyxia, which means he didn't smother, right? What they're saying is on the original autopsy, the state autopsy, is that the man had underlying health conditions, probably brought on by the excitement, the fear, the pain, the whole thing of what's going on there in the street. And his heart gave out. Now they say toxicology, which means they got to go check. Had he been drinking? Did he have any kind of drugs in his system? I don't know. But we have to, as a civilized society. What this cop did appears to be uncivilized. But the rest of us have to be civil and have to look and see what actually happened here. Now, either way, Mr. Floyd is dead and he should not be dead. There's no doubt about it. The officer appeared to me to not be concerned about the man. Now, a lot of my cop friends out there will tell you, we have arrested people and they say and do anything to get the advantage during the arrest. Now, I'm not saying Mr. Floyd did that. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But a lot of people have said that. They got handcuffs on, and they say, the handcuffs hurt, take them off. And you take them off, and they pull away from you, and they start running, and they fight. Because I've seen cops do it, because they feel bad. Somebody's hand is hurting. They didn't mean to put them on like that during a wrestling match. You got somebody there, and you just got to get them cuffed to control them. And they put them on, and sometimes you could put them on at a bad angle, and it can be painful. Right? And it can be painful. So what they teach us in the police academy, at least what I was taught, was if you're going to do that, you put another set of cuffs on properly, then you take off the ones that are causing the pain. This way you keep control of the person. But I've seen a lot of cops feel bad that the person, now the fight's over, the person's up, they're not resisting anymore, but their hands really hurt. So what they do is I'll fix the cuff. They pull the cuff off and off to the races we go again. Another fight. Right? It does happen. The average person doesn't see it. Because the average person is not a cop. They're not out in the street doing this work. My whole purpose here is not to make excuses for what the cop did. It's not. I was shocked when I saw the video. And I have had people fake an injury during an arrest. I have had people say that things happened to them that didn't happen. The advent of the body camera and the police car cameras has been a boon to law enforcement. Because what people say happens during an arrest and what it actually turns out to be are sometimes very, very different, because video is very, very powerful. We can see exactly what happened, who said what, and what transpired. So I remember when video cameras first came to law enforcement. A lot of cops were dismayed by it, saying, you know, they're going to use every little thing that I said or did, and it's going to use it against me. It turns out I was in internal affairs for several years. You know, and my idea of internal affairs is that it should be part of the integrity program of a department. If cops do things right, we should support them. If they do things wrong, they have to face the consequences. And then we retrain so that it doesn't happen again if something bad happened. But the cameras, I'm going to tell you, probably 9 out of 10 times exonerate the officer. Because people, believe it or not, they don't like to get arrested. And they know if they scream, oh, the cop said this to me, the cop punched me, the cop hit me for no reason. And then you watch the video and you find that the person is swinging their arms, they're cursing and screaming, they're kicking. Well, cops are not there to get beat up. That's not the job. Well, you must take a beating from this citizen. No, you overcome their actions with the use of force and you get them under control. That's the reality. The more they resist, the more force you can use. You know, we see it, right? We see justified homicide when people pull a knife or a gun on a cop and they shoot him and kill him. You're justified, all right? It's still a homicide. Person died by the hand of another human being, but it's justified, right? Because we have the right to protect ourselves as law enforcement. The cameras, though, have come to show that the cops do not do all the things that people claim, because people still claim it. They don't realize it, and then they get there in the video, and you see the video, and, well, when did the cop call you that name? When did the cop just punch you in the face for no reason? When did the cop slam you on the ground for no reason because he felt like doing it? And then you don't see that. All right? Now, it has also been a very good help to citizens when an officer does do something wrong because it's on video. When the officer does turn around and slam somebody to the ground for no reason or inappropriately or out of adrenaline or anger or whatever it is, that is unacceptable on the part of a police officer. Believe me, you can easily get all amped up during an incident. Chasing somebody, a car chase, a foot chase, a fight. You get all pumped up. You're a human being. And the natural reaction is to keep hitting. But that's not right when you're a cop. You hit only as much as you need to hit. When you win the fight, that's it. It's over. That's what has to be trained into our officers, and that is what's trained into our officers. Do individual people do bad things? Of course they do. Are there some bad cops? Of course there are. But it is not the majority of our police officers that put on that uniform every day and patrol your town. They're not out there trying to hunt you down. This is where sometimes you can lose people in the argument. Now, I know, as does any other thinking person, that the African-American community in our country feels put upon by law enforcement. Right? To say any other thing would be a lie. You know, they feel that they are over-policed, that their community is targeted for law enforcement. And in cases where that does happen, that is 100% wrong. That is not what policing is for. And as a police executive, I would never stand for that kind of behavior. You are there to serve the public, all of the public, to keep people safe and secure. I think we can all agree on that. That's the purpose of the police, right? Somebody is living in their house, doesn't matter what community they're from, and someone's breaking into their home, they should call the police and the police should come out and go after the violator, the criminal that's trying to break in, and protect the homeowner no matter who they are. That's the purpose of police work, right? That's what we all should be doing. The fact that we need to have a bigger conversation about this is the problem, because it doesn't suit a lot of people who use race issues as a wedge between us. They want us at each other's throats. They don't want to solve these problems, and therefore, they will attack anyone who comes out and says, let's have a bigger conversation. Let's solve this problem once and for all. We are all Americans. Everyone deserves to be treated fairly and deserves to have justice. Every single American, black, white, brown, yellow, doesn't matter what color your skin is. We are human beings, and we have to treat each other properly. When there's a problem in law enforcement, it has to be addressed. When we have an officer that goes rogue, we have to address them, charge them if that's appropriate, and get them off the force. But we also have to remember that all of those cops that are out there are trying to do the right thing every single day. They are not the problem. And to target them, to attack them, that, well, now you're going to get yours, that cop didn't do anything. That's like saying that any one group is exactly the way the worst of the group behaves. By seeing that cop in Minneapolis and saying, well, that's how most of the cops are, we know it. No, you don't. You saw a bad cop, and we've seen individual instances of bad cops, because cops are authority, so when they do something wrong, you see it. It'd be just like saying, hey, everybody in that group, that guy's a burglar, so the entire group is burglars. It's not true. We cannot stereotype. We cannot paint with a broad brush. But we do have to do something about this problem in our country, because our country is burning. And that is never good for anybody at all. This is Lieutenant Joe. I'll be back in a minute.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are trying to sort our way through some of the things that are going on in our country. Hey, whatever happened to the coronavirus? You got business owners that want to open their business and they get 35 cops show up at their business to lock them up and take them away. But here we have thousands and thousands of people in the street. And they're getting pretty close together. I guess we should see a spike. I guess in all of these cities where all these riots are going on and the virus is so virulent that we're now going to see a spike because people can pass it to each other very easily. I don't see a lot of masks out there in the crowds of people that are protesting. I don't see a lot of masks on the rioters. So I'm going to assume that there will be a spike in the coronavirus in the coming weeks. Because what's it, a 10-day incubation? And we should have all people going to be sick. And we should see, boy, this is really bad. Now, that may or may not happen. And I'm not hoping that that happens. I'm hoping exactly the opposite, that there is no rise in coronavirus. And we can see that it's time to get going, get back to life. You know, we can survive this. Let's move on. You know, when I come here on Chasing Justice, and the title, like I've said before, the title was chosen for a reason. Justice. What is justice? Justice is more than just fairness. It's what is inherently right in interactions between people. It is inherently what is good. Justice is good. If someone does something bad and they're held to account, that is justice. If somebody owes you money and they pay you back, that's a good deal. If they don't pay you back, they have to be held to account for not paying you back. They get arrested, they get charged, and the court forces them to pay. They take money out of their pay, whatever. That's justice, right? When someone does something horrible to someone else, our society demands we arrest them, hold them to account, and then they pay the penalty. The justice is in the jail sentence. The justice is in the death penalty. We have to be held accountable for what we do and say. So I feel very, very badly for George Floyd. He lost his life in this encounter. Any thinking human being, any human being with a heart would have to say exactly the same thing. This man did not start out his day expecting to die. And now today he's dead. And his family doesn't have him. His friends don't have him. And he doesn't have his life. So where do we go? How do we address the issues here? Because you know what I hate? I hate in any political argument or any argument about anything when somebody brings up a point and the other person, instead of addressing that point, let's talk about those facts that you brought up, they turn around with the, well, whatabouts? Whatabouts are an obfuscation of the argument. So for the moment, let's talk about what happened to George Floyd. Not, well, what about all the cops that get killed? No. That is a legitimate conversation, but not now. Right now, let's address Mr. Floyd and what happened to him. Let's address the behavior by the officers on that scene. Was it right or was it wrong? Were they evil or were they stupid? Was there any justification to what they did, or were they totally unjustified and they abused their power? And therefore, for whatever it comes out to be, justice must be served. For Mr. Floyd, for his family, and for all the officers there. Every officer in America, I think most people, cops and non-cops everywhere, were in agreement that what they saw happen to Mr. Floyd was horrific. They would never wish it on anybody. That we felt pain and horror for him on the ground, calling. He calls for his mother, I believe, as he's laying there. Who would ever see that and not have their heart moved? Fellas, pick him up. Get him up off the ground, right? That's your internal plea when you see that happening. I get it. But right now, we have to address that issue. Once that issue is addressed, and the officer's been arrested, he's been charged, the other officers probably will be charged with something. They've all been fired. Now, I know firing someone is really not an appropriate punishment for wrongdoing. It's very costly to them. They lose their career, they lose their pensions, they lose their pay. Sure, Mr. Floyd lost his life, right? It's apples and oranges. We have to look at this and say, okay, if those officers are deemed to have done something wrong, then they should be held accountable. That's justice. But we're not going to do that by burning our cities down. That's not how this happens. So one of the things we have to consider in this conversation is we deal with Mr. Floyd and what happened to him. We deal with those cops. Now you want to have the next conversation? what's going on in law enforcement. Is there some kind of, I guess, bias against minority communities? I don't know. I never felt biased against anybody. I dealt with everybody exactly the same. But that was me. That was Lieutenant Joe's career. It didn't matter, good guy, bad guy. It didn't matter your race. It's what you did, your actions that you took, right? And that's how I pursued justice for the victims, regardless of who the victim was. Didn't matter. You try and treat people as you would want to be treated. We all have family. We want our families to be treated properly. I have seen and heard the voices of many, many, many of our brother citizens and sister citizens in our country that are African American. I have heard the pain in their voice, that they feel that they are under siege in their communities. And I have to say, I don't live in that community, but I see it on the news. I see people arrested. I see what's going on, and I hear their voice. Now, we need to go and see if that's really what's going on. Is there too much policing? Or is there not enough policing? See, that's one of the dangers here. Now, this is another argument, right? We're going to get into an argument here. The cops that are seeing this are going, you know what? I'm just not going to do anything. I'm just not going to arrest anybody. I'm not getting myself in trouble. I'm not getting locked up. And that's not the right answer either. The right answer is you have to do police work, but you have to do it honorably, with justice in mind, fairly to everyone, and do the right thing. That's police work. That's what we can talk about. That's what we have to has. That's what all of us need our law enforcement people to do. And I'm telling you, been a part of it for over 30 years. That is what they do on the large scale. On the small scale, yes, people do things wrong. Of course they do. We can beat this up forever. But the reality is we need to have that conversation. Let's look at the training. You know, training is different in every state. You know, in Minnesota, if that knee hold on the neck, that neck hold, is legitimate, that they're allowed to use it, but they're not allowed to use it here in New Jersey. But they can use an arm bar in some other state. We have all these disparate rules of what people are allowed to do. See, this is where you get into a bigger conversation. Is this a state's rights issue? Every state should be able to say, this is what we think is right for our people, right? Or is it something, it should be federalized and say, hey, here is the rules for law enforcement, all right? I'm trying to figure this out. I'm trying to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Don't we say that every week here in Chasing Justice? We have to look at every single part of this conversation with open eyes. We can't go into it with, well, whatabouts? And we can't go into it with our eyes closed. And we can't go into it with anger. And we can't go into it with animosity towards anyone. We have to go into this trying to figure out, how do we make this better? To make this better for everybody means we have to have an honest and open conversation. Are we capable of that in America today? Let's look and see. We're hearing that a lot of the people who are causing the trouble in the cities that are rioting, and there's a difference between protesting and rioting. First of all, we have to be crystal clear on that, right? Protesting and rioting. What I hear a lot of people doing is saying that, well, the protesters have a right to be angry, and the rioting and the looting and the crime that we're seeing, the attacks on innocent people, attacks on the cops, throwing bottles and bricks and Molotov cocktails, that is all legitimate because of the anger and the things that have happened or that they feel has happened to their community in the past. No matter whose community it is, white community, black community, doesn't matter. Anybody that feels aggrieved, if they feel that it's their right to strike back with violence to prove their point or to get someone's message, this is where we have to define that. Is that correct? Because I know there's a lot of people who believe, you know, traditional America should stay. Do they lash out with violence and say, oh no, we're doing this? See, that's called a revolution. When you have different ideas and you can't talk about it, then it comes down to force. You have to win the argument one way or another, and you're going to use force to win that argument. Right? That's kind of where we're getting to here. This is what I'm looking at. So protesting and rioting is completely different, no matter who is doing it. And in this case, we see the rioters of all different races. Right? We're not just seeing one community or another. We're seeing lots of different people together. You know, that's one, at least one thing, they're all together. But the thing is, they're committing crimes and violence against other people in the name of their anger. Is that justified? Well, the only time I can see striking out with violence is when you are directly, you personally, are directly in the line of potential serious injury or death. Now I can fight back with violence and I can win the conflict. Somebody breaks into my home and they want to attack me and my family, I can violently respond to repel them from hurting my family. When someone attacks the neighbor's house down the street, that neighbor has the right. She can protect herself and her family with violence to repel the attacker. I can't necessarily go down the street and respond with violence. Didn't happen to me. So what I'm trying to do is we have to clarify the difference between is it legitimate to riot, burn, steal, and loot as a way to make your point of view known? I don't think it is. I think it's an outcry of the protest. I think it builds up in this mob mentality. And anytime you put a bunch of human beings together and it starts to go, you ever go to a party and it turns into a really great party and everybody has a good time and everything that happens is funny or great? Well, that's a mob mentality too. We're all doing the same thing. And it can also go ugly. It can go the other way, like we're seeing in the streets of many American cities. Starting out as a protest, people are making their voices heard, which is what they're supposed to do. Our First Amendment says we can protest for redress of our government, of things we don't like. The people who are protesting have every single right to go out into the street and scream and holler and be upset and demand change. And we should all listen to them. Right? We don't have to listen to them. That's the other part of freedom. But we should listen to them. These are our brother and sister Americans. And they're upset about something. Let's listen. Can we make it better? That is every American's right. I absolutely stand by their right to protest what they don't like is going on. Absolutely. No question. What we have to say is, when does it cross that line and go into something that is not legitimate? Burning, looting, attacking people? That is not legitimate. And we have to call that out when we see it. See, one thing at a time. We deal with Mr. Floyd and what happened to him. We deal with the police. Now we deal with how we protest and what is across the line. Right? Because if we'll just allow anyone to just let their emotions run wild with them and they go crazy. If it happens here to me and I get upset because somebody broke into my house and then I go after 7 other neighbors' homes because I don't like those people and now I'm enraged and I get to do that, that's not right. We have to have this conversation, but we can't, because I'm actually hearing and seeing people on social media saying, you can't even argue that. If you do not see everything that's happening as legitimate, then you're part of the problem. No, I'm saying we can break all these things down and we can solve these problems together, all of us, but we got to be honest about each and every one of them. You know, Antifa is a dangerous organization. The president has now declared that he's going to name it as a terrorist organization. Good. They're out there to foment violence. They're not helping the protesters. They're hurting the protesters. Shouldn't we all support the protesters? Whether you agree with their message or not, they have a right to do it, and that's what we should support. It's what I support. They have a right to protest, to have their grievances heard. This Antifa coming in, starting violence, putting piles of bricks around the city so you could throw bricks and cause violence, that is mayhem. That is dangerous. That is not appropriate for our country. So how do we have these conversations? People tell you can't speak about it. If you speak about it, you're part of the problem. We have Antifa coming out there fomenting violence on both sides with a completely different agenda. They are using this schism in America today to further their beliefs, which their belief is anarchy, socialism, communism, right? That's what they want, and they're using this. They are hurting everybody. Now, if we can't clearly pull these things apart and look at them and see the truth of each thing, we're never going to solve the problem. Yeah, but, that never helps, right? Timing is everything. Timing is everything. We have to look at exactly what we're doing, figure out what we're trying to do, and then move forward from there. If we don't, we're going to have serious problems going forward because we are at that crossroad. We are at a terrible crossroad right now where we have to figure out how to address people's grievances, how to make them feel comfortable, how to allow them to live in justice and peace so that we can all live in justice and peace. That is the only right way forward. The problem is the conversation. You can't have the conversation. It immediately turns to name-calling and past grievances and arguments and holding people to account for things they didn't do because they're parts of certain groups. All of that is counterproductive and doesn't help any of us trying to solve these problems that are in front of us today. Now, I'm not saying all sides are right in every given instance. That would be foolish to think that. But not every cop is wrong, right? Not every suspect is guilty. Not every person who has something to say is correct. But we need to listen to all of the different voices and try and figure out between everything. How do we discern a way forward? How do we, as a country, figure out what can we possibly do to foster this conversation? But we have to be honest about it, and that's part of the problem. To be honest about it means you're going to get called names. Because if you talk about the cops, then you're going to get people who are going to be just such staunch defenders of law enforcement that they don't want to hear anything else. Same thing for every single group involved here. No matter what you do, there's going to be people that are just going to jump up and down and say, absolutely not, we're completely correct, and the other side is wrong. We have to be able to look inward and say, hey, is there a problem here? How do we address the problem? Right? Stereotyping is one of the worst things that you can do, painting a broad brush. This officer in Minnesota, he damaged law enforcement. He damaged justice. Right? He killed Mr. Floyd, or at least he was part of Mr. Floyd's death. I don't want to say he killed him. It's what it looks like. We all see that. But we'll have to see what the medical examiner says. Now, the family has hired Dr. Bodden, who's a very well-known pathologist, and he's going to take a second look and see if he comes up with something different. Now, you say to yourself, okay, well, he's being paid, and he knows what the family wants to hear. He knows what everyone else wants to hear, that this officer directly caused his death. We may or may not see that. You know, would I put it past anybody for faking something up? Well, maybe they did. But I guess we're going to find that out as time goes by. So let's all pay attention to see what's going on. Let's all try and be part of the solution and not a part of the problem. All right? When we come back, we're going to try something a little bit different. We're going to look at another problem in America, the problem of violence outside of the protests that we're seeing. We're going to look at a little bit of the active shooter incidents that are out there that are beginning up again as our society is starting to open. We have an interview with a young man who actually lived through a very recent one. We'll be back in a minute with Chasing Justice.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And we're going to try to take a look at some things a little bit differently here in our last little get-together for this episode. You know, we've talked about the schism here in America. We've talked about the problem of getting together, healing the wounds of all of our people, because we are all brothers and sisters. We are red, white, and blue. No matter your race, your creed, your religion, that is what has held us together: justice, liberty, and freedom. Well, that's under attack, and that's part of the problem. You know, I've said many times here that in any given election, we're really 51-49 now. There are huge numbers of our American brother and sister team here who do not believe in traditional America, who do not want traditional America anymore. They want to go to socialism. They want to consider it. They want to look at it. They want to take parts of it, all of it. And then we have radicals. We have the Antifa movement, which is a huge movement in our country that is looking to have chaos be the reigning factor in everything that goes on in our lives. They want to tear us down. All of these competing ideas is probably the biggest impetus for the pain that we're all feeling right now, because we can't seem to decide who we are anymore. We've kind of lost our path. You know, that's something that we're going to have to figure out if we're ever going to move past this. Now, I said I wanted to talk about something a little bit different in this segment here, and I do. I want to talk a little bit about some of the violence we had before the most recent explosion took place. You know, the active shooter incidents around the country with the COVID-19 shutdown has really quieted for quite a while, at least since March, right? Normally, we see lots of different kind of incidents around, but got kind of quiet when everyone had to stay home. But as the country starts to open up, there are more and more incidents starting to take place. Just in the past few months, we've had three outside active shooter incidents. Recently in Phoenix, Arizona area, there was an active shooter incident. And my next guest is a young man named Mike Davis. And Mike and I have worked together on some security projects. Mike was actually there with his wife when the shooting took place. And the interview you're going to hear now is me talking to Mike about that incident. So sit back and listen to this. This is someone who lived through one.
You know, one of the things that we talk about all the time is safety and security. Now, as you know, I have a safety and security company, True Security Design. I help people prepare to respond to violence. I help schools, businesses, houses of worship, summer camps, just about any place people connect together. And we have seen a rise over the last couple of years of active shooter incidents. These can be extremely scary because you don't know what's going to happen unless you're properly trained. The odds are not always with you, depending on where the attacker comes from and what happens. So today, I have a guest here with me, Mr. Mike Davis from Security Network Associates. Now, Mike's company, he could tell you a little bit about it, but the important story here is that Mike and his wife were recently in Arizona when an active shooter incident unfolded in the middle of their lunch. So, Mike, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Joe. Nice to be here with you.
You too. So tell us just a little bit about Security Network Associates. What do you do?
So Security Network Associates is a company that really looks for up-and-coming technology products, and then we provide sales and consulting services to companies looking to take those products to the market.
Okay, and you're based out of Denver?
Based out of Denver, doing some expansion. That's why we were down in Arizona.
Okay, so whereabouts did you go in Arizona? Who was with you, and what was going on before you became involved in this incident?
Yeah, so just, you know, on an exploratory trip, trying to learn the area and look at houses and office spaces and that sort of thing. We were in Glendale, Arizona, just north of Phoenix. There's a very nice complex there called Westgate Entertainment District. That's where we decided to explore, have some food and rest a little bit and enjoy some nice Arizona weather.
Okay, and you're having something to eat, and run us through that now, because, you know, most of us have not been involved in situations like that. You know, law enforcement, I was in that. I was involved with gunfire when it's happening around you. It's very scary. It can be confusing. You know, sounds come from lots of different places. People are confused. They're screaming and yelling. What was your experience?
So my wife and I are sitting and we're having a nice meal, having a conversation. We're an outdoor patio at a restaurant. As we're having a conversation, a family of five runs around the corner and the wife was yelling gun. And we definitely paused because this is definitely out of the ordinary. And the way she was saying gun wasn't how you might think or might see in the movies. It was definitely a different tone of voice. So we weren't sure if she was joking or playing with her kids or whatever. But, you know, kind of start paying attention. Then we see a few more people start running and we kind of look around the corner. And sure enough, there's a guy with a gun. And it was about that time that we heard the first shots. And he did actually shoot three people then.
Okay, so I think it's important. You heard, now the family that was moving, were they running or were they
running?
They were running. And absolutely. The woman was saying gun.
Yes.
And what was your first initial thought when you heard that? I mean, how did that register with you, gun? What could that be?
You know, the first thought is, you know, somebody saying gun, and it definitely gets your attention. But the thing that maybe gave me pause was, she was running with her family and her kids, and they weren't really at a dead sprint. They're kind of running as fast as their kids could go. And they had some kids, maybe 5, 6, 7 years old. So I'm almost thinking they're kind of playing with their kids. And so that was the hesitation there when we're looking at. And pretty much I'd say there's maybe 6 or 7 other tables on the porch at the same time full of people. And everybody kind of had the same reaction, kind of look at them, pay attention for a second, not sure exactly what's going on. Until, of course, we heard the shots, and then it became clear.
Right. At that point, when you saw the family and heard them saying gun, there were no gunshots.
Right. Not yet.
And that's the kind of confusion when I try and teach this to people. You know, you get some kind of indicator that something's going on, and it's out of left field. It's not something that's part of our every single day life.
Absolutely.
I am sure that from now on, you will be very in tuned to anyone saying the word gun.
Absolutely.
Because it kind of changes your perception now that you've done something like that.
Yes.
I mean, so there you are. And then you hear the family goes by and you actually hear the gunshots. Now, what did they sound like to you?
You know, this was an AR-15 and it definitely has a distinctive volume and a distinctive sound to it. It was loud. It was deep. And it was it definitely got your attention. So, you know, the first couple shots went off. There were probably 5, 6 shots that went off right away. And, you know, this was between buildings. And so there's a lot of echoing. I mean, it definitely was enough to get your attention.
Okay. So are you familiar with weaponry? Have you heard AR-15s before?
Yeah. So I've spent some time in the Air Force. You know, I'd qualified in M16s and such. So I'd had some experience with weapons of that nature, and definitely, you know, hearing a fully automatic weapon you know, I definitely knew what that was and I understood what that meant at that point.
Okay, so there you are. Now all of a sudden you recognize that there's this sound. How far away do you think the shooter was from you? Could you see him at that point?
Yeah, we could. And so I'm going to say maybe 75 yards, 50, 75 yards, somewhere in that distance. He was in no hurry. He even after he shot the first couple of people, went up and said something. We turned out later, heard that he had told the woman that she got lucky. He hit her in the leg and then his gun jammed. And then he had said something to her and then kind of turned his attention back to everybody else who was running away from him.
Okay, so you and your wife take off.
Were
you with anybody else?
No, just the two of us.
Okay.
So we took off. I let her go first. She starts running. Then a whole bunch of people kind of got between her and I. And so I lose track of her for a second. So I lose track. I run out the patio and I turn back to try and find her in the crowd of people. And she, she and a few others, had kind of gone on the inside track in the patio, and kind of bottleneck themselves. So they couldn't get out of the patio as the shooter starting to come. And so I had been outside the patio. And so there's like a little barrier, maybe a 5-foot barrier. And there were about three women who had come, who had kind of run on that inside. Obviously they weren't thinking, you know, it was adrenaline pumping and, you know, they just run. So I had to go back there and help those girls over the wall so that they could continue to run. Grabbed my wife and then, you know, we headed out too.
Okay. And were there more gunshots following you? Was he firing as you were doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's definitely walking our direction. More gunshots, kind of sporadic. There had been a few seconds in between, and hard to say, but maybe 10, 15 seconds in between those first shots and the time he starts shooting again. And I think we learned later that was his gun had jammed and he had done something to rectify that. But in that time, he's kind of walking. Then we hear, you know, shots coming again, kind of see, you know, in the distance coming, get all those girls over the wall. And he's just really kind of blindly shooting, you know, often in bursts at that point. And it was, you know, 5-6 rounds at a time. And he would do those every few seconds.
Right. Now, were any of the rounds hitting near you? Were they skipping off the ground, hitting walls, or you couldn't tell?
I got to tell you, there was so much chaos at that point. They could have been, and I don't know if I would have noticed. You know, it was really focused on getting these people over the wall, getting to my wife, and getting out of there.
So how far was it from the time you get your wife and the other ladies over the wall? He's behind you now, coming your way.
Yeah, actually, I'm facing him at that point. I'm facing him, and then so I'm seeing him come that direction, and then as I'm pulling these girls over the wall. So he was probably only 50 yards at that point. And definitely come in our direction.
You got very lucky. He had a clear shot at you.
He did.
Okay, so you get over the wall. How far did you have to travel till you could turn out of his path, or what did you do there?
Fortunately, we only had to travel maybe 20 yards or so, and then the building came to an end, and we could take a right into the parking lot, and that's where we got into the parking lot and started taking cover between cars.
Okay, at some point, I guess law enforcement showed up, or was there security there, or how did this end?
Yeah, so obviously law enforcement was called as soon as he got out of his car and people saw a gun. There were people who called law enforcement, thank God. And we were running out of the restaurant, then we got into the parking lot area, and he was continuing to follow in our direction and continuing to shoot. Once we got to the parking lot, we were kind of zigzagging through the cars, trying to stay low, and we get to the end of the parking lot, and which kind of leads off into another complex. And so we made a run for it to that other complex and got behind a building. He got into the parking lot where we were and stopped. So he stopped firing at that point, stopped going after people at that point, and just kind of started meandering around the parking lot. That was about the time law enforcement came. Law enforcement started at the other end of the building where the shooting, or other end of the complex where the shooting started. And then they came in and then they started, you know, sweeping the area until they got to him.
Okay. When they got him, did he surrender or was he taken out by force?
No, he totally surrendered. Later on, we saw a video online. You know, he got to the parking lot and then pulled out his cell phone, started talking to somebody, had the gun in his hand, people running by him, cars driving by him, didn't take shots at any of those. He had apparently done what he came to do, which seemed more to get attention than anything else. But after that, when police did pull up on him, he just dropped his gun and got on the ground.
Amazing. So I understand you had lost your cell phone in this incident.
I did. The second most traumatic thing of the day. I did. I lost my cell phone when I was helping the girls over the wall. And so I had to go back and get that. But it was an active scene for a full 24 hours, so it took a bit.
I'm sure it was. And if you could say, you know, to people who were listening, as the world starts to open back up now, you know, we're all going to start going back out again. We're going to be going to restaurants. Arizona's open, like you said. What are the takeaways you think you would say, just in general safety and security for people, if they're out and about, you should just pay attention to this? What would it be?
You know, for me, I think there's probably a few things. Number one is, I think people are under a lot more stress than I may have given credit to. And, you know, there's really no logical reason for this to happen other than a person who's in duress and depression. And I think it's definitely wise, maybe now and maybe forever, but just be a little more perceptive of your surroundings and a little better eye in looking for these sort of things. I mean, I'm in security business. I've been in the military. I don't have your background, Joe, but I feel like I typically do have a situational awareness better than most. But even I sat there and paused for a bit, and I shouldn't have. You know, hearing something, seeing a family run, I should have got up and taken action right away.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna stop you right there, because all these shoulds are the things that get us in trouble. When I preach this and I talk about this and I say it's being aware and prepare. But the thing is, if you don't have that mindset going all the time, when something like this happens, that confusion can jump in there. So saying you should have done something, I'm saying you did exactly the right thing. You did more than what a lot of people would have done. But we're not always prepared for that. We don't always think it's going to happen where we are. And that, I think, is one of the bigger problems about right. this. And that's why I want people to understand. You can never say, it'll never happen to me, it'll never happen here. But you don't have to be paranoid. What you want to do is be aware. Like you said, situational awareness. If I had to go here, where would I go? I know as a cop, you do that. You go into a restaurant, you look around. Okay, you're not paranoid, but you're looking, where's the doors? Where's the, you know, where would I get out of here? Because this can happen in nightclubs. This can happen in your church. This can happen anywhere now.
Right.
So I think that's really an amazing thing. I think it helped that you had military experience. I think that probably helped you a lot. Yeah. You know, the other people that were there or were running like crazy, you had the mind to stop and get people over a wall to get them out of there. Where somebody else, obviously a lot of other people kept on running. They didn't stop to help anybody.
So we did see one of the women later who said her husband was in trouble for leaving her. So yes.
Oh yes, I bet he would be. You know, you want to do the right thing there as best as you can. Mike, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on to tell your story. It's not every day we get to hear from someone who was involved in this and survived and can be so eloquent in how they tell the story, because it's important for us to all remember.
It is. Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Joe.
Well, there you go, everybody. Thank you for being with me today. And let's all think about where we go as a nation, what we can do about violence of all kinds. I want to thank Mike Davis for coming on and sharing his story with us. We should all be aware and prepare, but that really goes for everything, doesn't it? We should look around and figure out how can we become brothers and sisters to each other, like God intends for all of us. Instead of finding ways to come apart, let's find ways to come together. Let's hope for healing, and let's hope for justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we'll see you next time here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.